time for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Good morning. We're on a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. And how are you this morning, Steve?
Really good.
That's good. Does rain help stuff, hurt stuff in the landscaping business, or does it make much difference this time of year?
Well, if you haven't been outside yet,
you
might need to grab a sweatshirt. Because the summer temperatures that we've had for the last 2 weeks, they're gone.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
In a big way.
Yep. Definitely today.
Yep. It's supposed to be nice next week, warm up, but today's
upper 60s, low 70s. Yeah.
Definitely not anything like we've had in the past couple of weeks. We've had some very humid, warm, humid weather, and we've been above certainly a few degrees above normal for the year. So we're back to normal temperatures, I guess, for October right now.
Yeah. Actually, still, I think we're still slightly above. Today, maybe not, but. Next week, still going to be upper 60s, low 70s for highs. But I wouldn't mind if we kept this and maybe a little warmer all the way till May.
I'd say at least April.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that at all. That's a good plan. It's a solid plan.
Yep.
Especially listening to the, if you believe, the Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, yeah?
Everybody's, Farmer's Almanac and some other sites I've been on have all suggested that there's going to be a cold, snowy winter. So, I mean, seriously, who's looking forward to that? If I want snow, I go to Colorado and find it.
Yeah.
Around here, I'm good with not having a lot.
Yeah, I don't like to shovel. For the last 50 years, I have not appreciated snow. When I could just, all I had to do was play in it, that was fine. Now, if you have to drive it and shovel it off the streets and sidewalks and everything, I'm not interested.
It's a nuisance. Well, the weather certainly, even, before last evening when we had the front come through, I guess there was some severe weather in different places because there was a big front that came from west to east and swept out all the humidity. And I checked my rain gauge before I left the house this morning, and I had about 1 2/10". So I know that varies a lot through the county and through this part of the state, because I've heard a lot more than that from some people, and I've heard a lot less than that from some people. So the showers were, and the storms were really scattered as they came across, and as that front kind of pushed all the humidity out. But still, great temperatures, actually, with the rain we had overnight yesterday and last evening, and the temperatures we're having today. Unfortunately, if you're not into mowing, that's really going to get the grass growing. The bluegrass, especially bluegrass and rye, really like cooler temperatures. They're cool season grass. And so the temperatures in the 50s and the highs in the 70s is just absolutely perfect. So my lawn, I did a lot of new seeding this last spring, and had a rough summer because I wasn't home very much. I was working a lot. I didn't set up sprinklers like I normally do the lawn, and it was new turf to begin with. It was brand, a lot of the areas were newly seeded. It really took a hit over July and August, and so I'm actually pretty excited to see the cooler temperatures and the rain, because I got some fertilizer on before all these rains came a few weeks back. And thatched my lawn before, I thatched it and then fertilized it. And it actually is just unbelievable how much ground it's gained in the last couple of weeks. So great grass growing time of year. Certainly planting with the cooler temperatures. We've been really busy with landscaping projects. And you just really minimize the stress on the plants when you move them this time of year. I mean, we'll landscape all summer if you know, the homeowner is aware that they need to water, or the projects we put in have irrigation systems. You know, we'll plan all summer. And plants are perfectly fine in July and August when it's hot and dry getting moved, but they're very touchy or very susceptible to really hot days. And you forget to water, or you're not watering enough, and, you know, they'll struggle and show symptoms of stress in one day. Just literally overnight, they can start declining because of that. This time of year is just, you know, ultra forgiving as far as planting goes. You can plant nearly anything right now, perennials, woody shrubs, trees, whatever. And it's just with the cooler temperatures, the plants aren't transpiring like they normally do, so they're not needing as much water. It's just a easier time for the plants to grab a hold and get established. And even your warmest days are going to be, you know, in the 70s. Potentially, you know, maybe we'll see the low 80s yet. Unlikely, but we might. But those temperatures are just, you know, ideal for, again, growing and getting things established. So planting, you know, mid-fall, late fall, even early winter on woody plants is a great time to plant. It really doesn't come to a point with woody shrubs. It doesn't come to a point where you shouldn't plant anymore in the fall. I mean, if you can dig a hole and get the plant in, the ground's not froze, chances are, as long as you're dealing with a healthy plant that's winter hardy for our zone, it's going to do fine. You're getting close to the point where some of your different perennial flowers, I would maybe, the herbaceous perennials, I maybe would hesitate planting a bunch of those in that they need a little bit more time to get rooted in before winter sets in. And so you might not have as good a luck with those. But if you're dealing with the old tried and true, you know, perennials, sedum, salvias, coreopsis, hostas, daylilies, coneflower, you know, those are plants that are perennials that you're probably not going to have any problems with as far as overwintering goes. But again, people are very apprehensive, seem to be very apprehensive, and the talk rumors or whatever are out there that, you know, if you plant too late in the season, the plant's not going to overwinter, it's going to die. And even if we have a cold, hard winter, again, if you're dealing with a good plant, planted properly, watered in, and zone hardy for our area, winters are unusual. It's unusual if you, again, start with a good plant. It's unusual to lose plants over the wintertime. I would say, as long as I've been landscaping, when we have, you know, we guarantee all of our plants that we install, which is unfortunate in a lot of cases, because it's amazing how, you know, we can grow plants in containers for months and months and months and months. In some cases, some of our bigger trees, we might get them in one season and grow them on, and then we don't sell them till next season. So we can keep plants alive in containers forever, seemingly. And then we go out and plant them in a landscape, and 2 weeks later, they're dead, and it's our fault because the plant was bad. And in every case I can think of, especially, you know, our guys are excellent at what they do. It's, you know, again, the customer's always right. So you just shake your head and say, yep, we'll replace it. Knowing the whole time that they didn't water it, and that's the reason it crumbled.
Well, they were busy.
Well, yeah. Well, that don't work with your kids. If you starve your kid to death, I mean, the cops don't care. So if you kill my plants,
yeah,
well, that's not an excuse that you're busy. You got to take care of the plants. Come on, Neil.
Well, okay. I'm sorry.
So, again, we have
my plants all died.
We have more trouble with plants not making it through, like, July and August. If it's a hot, dry summer and people aren't watering or caring for the plants, we'll lose more plants over a hot, dry summer than we will a really hard winter as far as replacements go. So, again, plants are going to tolerate cold winters, no problem. So late season, you know, planting is outstanding. We talked a little bit last week about late season fall mulching and how beneficial it is for the landscaping and the plants, especially, again, perennials and some of your, you know, woody plants. You kind of protect that root system by having, you know, basically a blanket over the root system for the wintertime. Holds moisture in, holds heat into the ground, and so it's hugely beneficial for, you know, plants. And again, a lot of people are, you know, not thinking about that. Again, a lot of people, the later it gets in the season, they're anxious to put everything to bed, so to speak, as far as the lawn and landscape goes. And it's unfortunate because there's so many opportunities to get out there and enjoy the lawn and the landscape and, you know, gain a lot of ground for next season. By planting now, if we had a huge, you know, like tree planting to do, which we have had in the past, where we're planting, you know, maybe 50 trees or 100 trees in different properties. If we have a large planting to do like that, we prefer to do it in October, November, even early December, because the trees are either dormant or they're well on their way to dormancy, and the care that they require is a lot less. And so if you've got a huge property and you can't drag a hose out and water everything that we plant, we try to time those installations for, you know, late fall, early winter, and would highly recommend that over, you know, like an April, May planting, because if you get something in this time of year, it basically, again, the ground's, even if the tree's dormant and doesn't have any foliage, you know, getting the tree planted, if the ground's really warm, you're still going to get some activity below ground. So the roots are going to start to kind of stretch out and grab hold. And again, that happens with, you know, turf too. People talk about, you know, fertilizing late. And if it's too late, the grass isn't going to take it up. The grass isn't going to benefit from it. Well, yes, if it's wintertime and the grass is, or the ground's frozen and the grass is dormant, that is true, but late fall fertilization, even well into November, is beneficial, because just because the air temperatures are cold, the root zone is still warm and those roots are still active. And so if there's food there, they're going to take it in and again store it for wintertime. Same thing happens with trees. You know, again, they can somewhat get established, kind of get their feet underneath them, and then they're much they can almost be a whole season ahead for spring when the weather does warm up. They've already been in for, you know, 3 months or 4 months, and so they're better established, and they're going to make it through, you know, April, May, and June is usually a piece of cake because we get fairly consistent rain. Once we get into July and August, it gets pretty sketchy as far as consistent rain goes. And if you plant something in the fall, it's going to be much more adapted to being able to tolerate those hot days through July and August than if you planted it in April or May, which you're then basically giving it, you know, a month or two to get ready for the hot, dry summer. So fall planting is that was a long-winded answer to, you know, fall's a great time to plant. I could have just said fall's a great time to plant.
But details and reasons why are good, because people could just say, hey, I don't think you're right. And, of course, you can't argue with them because you can't hear them say that. So if you give them your reasons.
Well, let's face it, there's a lot of things that I don't know about, but there are a few things I do know something about, and this would be one.
Yep.
This would be one of the few.
Okay.
Things I'm confident on would be landscaping, horticulture, and old Chevys.
Yeah.
Everything else is just kind of gray after that.
Yeah. But. And enthusiasm for the Buckeyes, at least. I don't know if you know a whole bunch about it, but your enthusiasm is
I make up for it. And what I lack in brains in Ohio State, I definitely make up for an enthusiasm. It's a good point. I like it. We'll take a break and we'll be back.
The versatile Kubota B-Series is a do-it-all tractor. Run powerful attachments that can be easily switched out. It features a hydrostatic transmission and is simple to maintain. The Kubota B-Series. It makes the hard work look easy. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo.
Your local Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Buying a new grill from a big warehouse is like trying to start your old grill. You can end up standing around by yourself and nothing happens. That's not what happens at Ace. Wengler Ace Hardware has an exclusive lineup of premium brands plus premium service from the people who know you best. We'll make sure you get the right grill, whether it's gas, wood pellet, or a flat top griddle. And better yet, we'll assemble and deliver it right to your patio. Don't forget, your newest grill is never far away, and neither is our help. That's why grilling starts at Ace. Stop by Wengler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery, your grilling destination.
Need a better job where the benefits are great. A family-friendly company with competitive pay. Where people stop and greet me when they see my smiling face. Cooper Farms. It's more than a workplace.
Full-time production positions start at $15.25 an hour. To apply, visit CooperFarmsJobs.com. Cooper Farms, it's more than a workplace.
The American Legion Ladies Auxiliary Annual Breakfast is coming up on Sunday, October 17th, from 8 in the morning to 12:30 in the afternoon. It's all-you-can-eat whole hog sausage, pancakes, and scrambled eggs, plus great homemade baked goods and more, and your beverages included, coffee, milk, and orange juice. It's only $7 for adults and $4 for children 4 to 8, and kids 3 and under are free. Head out to the Legion on Sunday, October 17th for some great food. It's the Ladies Auxiliary Breakfast from 8 a.m. to 12:30.
Get ready for the return of the Cooper Farms Turkey Trot 5K. After a year off, we're ready to gobble our way through St. Henry on Saturday, November 6th, all while benefiting Everhart Hospice. In-person registration begins at 9 a.m. with race beginning at 10 a.m. The flat 3.1-mile course will start and finish at Cooper Farms Processing in St. Henry. Water will be provided on the course with chip timing provided by Speedy Feet. Following the race, enjoy a delicious hot turkey meal, carryout style. For pricing and full race details, visit SpeedyFeet.com and search for the Cooper Farms Turkey Trot. Cooper Farms Turkey Trot.
We're back. A walk through the garden with Steve Stone on Saturday morning. This is October 16th, so we're halfway through the month of October.
This summer's been a blur.
Yeah.
Gone by pretty fast.
Yeah, you've been busy.
We've been busy. before the break, talking about fall, you know, and planting and things to get ready for. With, you know, I don't see any in the forecast, so don't get too excited. But we're going to get to a point here, being mid-October, we're going to be talking about some frosts and freezing overnight temperatures. You know, things to get ready for, you know, that time of year is... If you do a lot of container gardening, and Nikki and I do a lot, we have a lot of different containers, plastic, resin, ceramic, clay, all different types of pots. And you don't necessarily have to bring those containers because some of them are really heavy. Some of the ones Nikki and I have are really big and heavy. And they're not easy to move, and so a lot of times we'll leave them outside, and then that way we don't have to move them. But to get ready for winter on especially anything that's going to, you know, freeze and potentially crack, which would be, again, the ceramic or clay pots. Resin are usually pretty forgiving, and then also plastic pots are pretty forgiving as far as, you know, they can expand a little bit and not break. But you're not going to have that with some expensive ceramic and, like I said, ceramic and clay containers. Those can stay outside all winter, but you definitely have to, you know, tip them over or at some point, you know, get the soil out of them and get the roots and everything out of the pot. They need to be, they don't have to be completely empty, but they have to have the majority of the soil and root system and everything from the pot out. What causes the damage is if, you know, through the summertime with the soil and you're consistently watering and the roots grow and thrive, or they should be, and they get bigger. When that root zone over the wintertime freezes, it's going to expand. And when it expands, it breaks the containers, or it'll crack, or in some cases they'll just literally fall to pieces. If you get those, that root system or that root ball, so to speak, out of that container, the great big containers that I have that I used to make an attempt to move inside, but don't anymore.
Yep.
I just cleaned, Nikki last Sunday, I believe, just worked her rear end off, getting the containers kind of cleaned up, and I just take them, we'll pull the plants out of them, and I just flip them over and just set them where they're at upside down, and that way they're clean, they're easy to plant next season. All I have to do is flip them over, and then there's no issue issues at all with them, you know, freezing and cracking because there's nothing in them. If you have some loose soil in them, a little bit of loose soil over the winter time, that's not going to cause any damage. But again, if you have grown something in them all summer and the soil's pretty tightly compacted in there, there's lots of roots in there. If you leave that outdoors, you know, over the winter time, chances are it's going to be ruined come springtime. If you don't have, you know, great big heavy containers, it's always a nice idea to take them in and put them in the garage or in the basement or in a shed or something to keep them out of the weather. But if they're heavy, they're certainly fine to leave out on your patio. Or in some cases, if you've got some plants, I've always had people ask me about overwintering, you know, certain types of plants in containers. And if it's a tropical type of a plant, you know, there's a little likelihood that they're going to survive. If you have a marginally hardy plant that you want to try to overwinter, potentially in a container, the best thing to do is to take that container and get it up against the house someplace. If you can get it in and behind your landscaping and kind of tucked up into a corner where it gets some protection from the winter, or, you know, again, a corner of your house where potentially, you know, the way it sits in the corner is going to shelter it a little bit. You might have success with a medium to mild winter, you know, overwintering things in containers. I know a lot of people that try to, you know, keep ferns or geraniums or certain plants from season to season. And some of those aren't going to tolerate freezing temperatures, so you need to move them into a garage or a basement or something where they're... And again, what you usually struggle with is light. They don't get enough light to keep them happy. You can keep them watered, and in a garage, like an attached garage, it's not going to freeze, but they just don't get enough sunlight, and so they start to defoliate. And that's not necessarily all bad. If they do defoliate, you keep them watered, it does, the plant doesn't have to be at 70 degrees or 60 degrees. As long as it doesn't freeze, it can get down into the 40s in your garage, and the plants are going to be perfectly fine. And like I said, in some cases, if you keep them watered, if they do, like geraniums in particular, I know people that have overwintered those from season to season. If they do lose all their leaves, it's almost a good thing because then they're not transpiring. They don't need as much water. But as long as you keep them watered and keep the roots hydrated, once you can move them back outside in the spring, they'll start to generate new leaves and they'll be perfectly fine. I've had people try to overwinter the tropical hibiscus, and same thing. They definitely don't get enough sunlight because usually if it's in a garage, you know, you're not, there's just not enough foot candles of light from the sun to keep them things happy. So they will turn yellow and start to defoliate. But again, if you keep them watered, they will go into kind of a dormancy kind of a state where they're not going to do anything over the winter. But if you keep them watered, they're not going to croak. And then when you start getting some warmer temperatures in the spring, and when I say warmer, I just mean as long as it's not a freezing night, you can move those outside, and you'll see in some cases, I'd say a lot of cases, they'll, you know, start to put out some new foliage, and you can overwinter stuff. So I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot telling people to overwinter stuff because we typically would like them to come out and buy all new. But
well, but that's okay. You're telling them nice ways to take it. It'd be like somebody selling somebody a new car and kind of not mentioning that they need to service it.
That's right.
So we hope your car falls apart, so you come buy a new one. But if you're selling good quality stuff and tell them how to take care of it, people appreciate that.
That's right.
They might not buy another hibiscus, but they'll buy the rest of their stuff from you because you helped them out.
That's right. If you're, again, trying to overwinter stuff in containers outside, like I had mentioned, you know, keeping them you know, up close to the house to kind of give them some protection from the winter. Always remember your coldest, usually your winter winds are going to be west, northwest, especially northwest is usually, you know, where your coldest winds are going to be coming from. So obviously that's not the side of house you want to put stuff on. You want to look at, an east exposure, you know, like a southeast exposure would be absolutely ideal, because when the sun comes up, you're going to get some of that warming rays of the sun to, you know, to help those plants. But again, if you can find a corner to kind of store stuff in of your house, you know, that's the corner you want to look for, is going to be east, southeast. That's going to be the most protected site over the winter to try to keep some of those things alive. But again, if you're dealing with anything that's, you know, again, tropical, you know, different varieties like hibiscus and fern and palms and things like that, you know, those are probably going to have to be in an unheated garage, as long as that it doesn't freeze. As long as the temperatures are above 35 degrees, you can keep anything alive. and you really don't want them in a warm situation where they're going to be trying to grow, because that's just going to require more maintenance for you to try to keep them watered. If you somewhat isolate them and they're, like I'd mentioned before, they're not getting a lot of sun, they're going to struggle, but as long as you keep them watered, they're not going to croak. And then that way you can kind of keep them in a somewhat semi-dormant state, and then when, again, the weather gets nice, you can get them outdoors.
Yep.
So we'll have to take another break, and we'll be back to get wrapped up.
It's time to begin planning your landscape improvements for this summer. Nature's Green Nursery can design a beautiful, cost-effective, no-maintenance landscape for your home or business with quality trees, shrubs, perennials, soils, and mulch. Steve Stone has a degree in horticulture landscape. Call Nature's Green at 419-375-2322 today and set up a free landscape design and evaluation. Check out Nature's Green on the web or like them on Facebook. Nature's Green Nursery on State Route 119 just east of Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel, or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage. Go Indians.
Wayne Street Market has the best steak prices in the area, always $2, $3, $4 a pound less than everybody else. They buy in large quantities and pass that savings on to you, and there's no limit on how much you can buy at these great prices. Ribeyes are $9.99 a pound, flat iron steaks are $8.99 a pound, and T-bones and New York strips are only $7.99 a pound. Get some steaks and grill them up while the weather's still nice, and grab a bunch more and put them in the freezer to save for later. Great prices on great steaks at Wayne Street Market, the best meat market around. It's time again for the one-of-a-kind auction. It's coming up on Sunday evening, October 17th at the Middle School Auditoria, with the doors opening at 5 o'clock. This year's theme is Celebrate, Come On. And tickets can be purchased at Calp Pharmacy and from Historical Society members. It's only $10 per ticket and includes an awesome buffet of desserts and appetizers provided by the ladies of Psi Iota Xi. Come early and visit with old and new friends and get a good look at the dozens of items in the live and silent auctions. There's sure to be something for everybody, with lots of items in the raffles, live auction, and silent auction. Unique items from vacation packages in Florida and Indiana Beach to beautifully crafted handmade items, numerous food items from local restaurants, college sports tickets, and a whole lot more, including your chance to buy some very unique items, one of the stained glass windows from the original Mary Help of Christians Catholic Church, and an original 1883 book by Mark Twain, Life on the Mississippi, and a number of beautiful handmade items from local artists. It's always a lot of fun, with many great items available for you to bid on, and the proceeds go to Project Recovery to help maintain our visitors center and the Fort Recovery Historical Society. Don't miss this great event, the one-of-a-kind auction, coming up on Sunday, October 17th.
On Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone, you just heard the commercial for the one-of-a-kind auction. That's tomorrow night. Tickets are available at the door, $10, and the food is worth every penny of that. And there's just some really, really cool stuff. Even if you're not intending to buy anything, and don't buy anything, it's still a really good time and seeing all the neat stuff. It's one of my favorite things. It's pretty cool.
The Historical Society really hit a home run when they started doing that.
Yep.
However many years ago.
This is the 20th.
That's unbelievable.
Which happens to line up with the 75th anniversary of the founding of the Fort Recovery Historical Society. Celebrate.
Very
Come
cool.
on. That's their theme this year.
Yeah, the committee's done just an unbelievable job putting that together year in and year out. They just have so many, they have so many dedicated people that make it happen. And then, you know, we have obviously the Fort Recovery Radio knows that we have just an unbelievably generous
Yes.
community that we live in. And that's, you know, that's Mercer County and parts of Jay County. It's not just Fort Recovery, which, I mean, we're the best, let's face it. But there is a lot more beyond that that is great as well.
Yeah, it kind of brings me to the thing, Homer Stockler, St. Henry.
Top-notch dude right there. Yeah,
he has donated several things, including some really intricate leaf-shaped kind of bowls. It's just really interesting. And Rob Weaver from Portland has donated some Reds items. Harley Jones, well, he's passed away, but
I was going to say Jones Jeweler. I had always, for years and years and years and years, done work for Harley and Faye. And Harley, unfortunately, you know, has gone. But I'll tell you what, that man... just absolute top notch. From the first day I was over there to do work for them, which I never knew the guy at all. Unbelievable guy, great guy, Vietnam vet. He's just a great dude. Mm-hmm. He's an Army vet. I shouldn't say if it was Vietnam or Korea, but anyhow, great guy. Always treated me like we had been friends our whole lives.
Yep.
And I know him and his wife were always huge. Yeah. And they still are, but
yes.
Harley's is just a really wonderful, wonderful
They've donated
person.
I think it's an $1,100 necklace that's just, I think it's rose gold with diamonds, I believe is what Nancy Kanapke was saying in the on Insight this past week, talking about the auction. It's just, you know, that's people that, you know, I'm sure Fort Recovery people go over there, but they're Salina,
yeah,
and they're making sure, I mean, he just donates $1,100 beautiful piece of jewelry almost every year. It's $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, $800 stuff that he's just giving us.
Yeah, and again, you just go down the list of all the people in Fort Recovery that donate so much time, effort, sweat, tears, everything that it takes to make that thing successful. And it is hugely successful every year. And then, you know, that reflects in the community, because you just look at all the really cool things that are happening throughout the town with the murals, the lighting of the monument, the walking paths. I mean, all the different things that... You know, every penny of that, and then some, gets dumped right immediately back into all the history that there is in Fort Recovery.
Yeah.
And so it makes you, I mean, it really makes you want to go. It makes you want to spend money because it's every penny is going to be dumped right back into, and you're going to see it.
And you see it. Yeah, I was just thinking too, but the Historical Society gets half the money, and the, I can't remember the name of the group now that takes care of the visitor center Project Recovery, and so Project Recovery is able to maintain and first of all build and then maintain the visitor center with the neat Shell gas pumps out front.
Yep,
there is one of those, not one of those particular ones, but Mike Gruby has restored a Shell gas pump that looks very similar to those. That's going to be on the live auction. If you're even remotely interested in something like that, for you already have what, Sinclair? I've got
two Sinclairs and I've got a Shell.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're looking to do that type of thing with your garage, I know Mark Eichenauer has some. I'm just thinking about the ones that I get to see. There's probably plenty of them in places that I don't drive by. That
you're talking about the cool car people.
Yes.
Me, Mark Eichenauer.
Yeah.
Laverne Weitzel.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit particular on their cars, too. But you don't have to be that particular with your cars to appreciate this Shell
Mike 10
pump.
The cool car people.
Yeah.
Did I say cool car people?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Seven times.
Okay.
But so there's one of those that's going to be available on the auction, and it's going to be and Mike Gruby does a just tremendous job.
I've heard. I haven't seen his work. I haven't seen, but I've heard people talk about him and the restoration that he does on those pumps.
Yeah,
and it's spectacular. And there's a perfect example of he donated that. So
yeah.
How many, I mean, I know, and you probably know how many, I would say hundreds of hours go into a restoration like that, plus even to buy one to start with. I mean, that's a very, very, very sizable donation that he made.
I think I said on Insight on Wednesday that even if he got that for free, the amount of time of, you know, and he's not doing $5 an hour work.
Sure.
He's doing $50 an hour work
more.
Sure. Yeah. It's and just that's just amazing. And, you know, it's not like he has a business where he's trying to sell all of these, so it's promo. He's just giving stuff back to the community. It's people like that.
Yeah.
That make, you know, he's been on the school board. He's done a bunch of things. He's just one of those people that gives back.
Yeah, and I know we're gonna we're gonna forget people, but you talk about people like, you know, Bob Hart and the amount of time that he has
in those bowls.
That I think some people look at stuff like that like they look at a car restoration and they're like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's really neat. You know, but that in like those bowls and the stuff that Homer does, I don't think a lot of people are that gas pump. People don't realize how many hours go into something like that and how much time, effort, and goes into that. And that's what impresses me is when you look at something like that, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, he had to have 200 hours in that.
Yeah, and the bowl that Bob Hart is donating this year is his 1,500th. It's 1,500th bowl that he's made, and I haven't seen it, but Nancy said, if you think the other ones were something, this one's really something. And even if you're not even going to buy it and wouldn't have any use for it if somebody gave it to you, you need to go to the auction and just look at this stuff. It's just fantastic.
Don Leonard's does some amazing stuff too.
Yes.
And he's critical in the Historical Society and invests just an unbelievable amount of time.
Yes, it is so good that there's people like that doing things like that. It's just, you know, they have talent, and so they give it. There's other people that have zero talent, and they give some money, and that's okay, too. You know, that's not a bad thing, but there's sometimes you have something that is a unique skill or a unique item that you can donate where they can auction it off. Other times, like Don, if he wasn't doing any of the woodwork to sell, you know, he and Louis Diller and I believe somebody else started helping him this past year. Can't remember who it is. They just take care of any little maintenance needs done. They just run up, take care of it, and most of the time nobody even knows, and they don't try to say, hey, everybody, come look at me. I'm going to be working here this afternoon, so come look at us and so everybody can see that we're doing stuff. That's not what they're doing.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people like that in town, that's for sure.
Yep.
Well, we got sidetracked.
We did.
About out of time. Again, another question I get an awful lot this time of year is, you know, and if you're looking around today, it's definitely we're not close. We're not even close to putting that mower away for the year. With the warm weather that we've had, everybody wants to look at the calendar and say, well, it's, you know, whatever, November, I'm done mowing. Mother Nature doesn't work on a calendar. Calendars are kind of our thing. So you could be done mowing in the middle of October on a certain season. You could be mowing Thanksgiving. on a certain summer or certain season. So as far as just, you know, getting to the point where I'm done and pushing the mower in, I mean, you can do that, but I'm telling you, it's not very good on your lawn. You want to consistently continue to mow. I was hoping to mow Thursday and didn't get home from work till like 8:30. So it was dark. And then yep. I thought, well, that's no problem. I'll get home early enough tomorrow, Saturday or Friday to mow. Well, that didn't happen. So now I'm considering, you know, talking to Tom LaFever about getting one of them big round balers. and
it's not that bad,
and,
Steve.
And bailing it this afternoon. Since the Buckeyes have an off Saturday, I definitely can mow. But it's just a train wreck just because it's been growing, you know, like mad. And so, again, continue to mow consistently. You don't have to set your deck up higher or lower. Just consistently, you know, keep the lawn mowed until, you know, Mother Nature, you know, says it's time to quit. And that's going to be when, you know, it's consistently cold and the grass isn't growing anymore. But to let it go, you know, and just push your mower in the garage and say, I'm done. And that stuff gets really tall and long and kind of lays over. I know I've talked about this a couple weeks back. It just isn't good for your lawn. It can create a lot of disease issues. It can really cause your lawn come springtime to really look lousy. And so, you know, consistent mowing until, you know, the grass just simply isn't growing anymore is the way you want to go about that. And again, absolutely not too late for fertilization, fall fertilization for your lawn, landscape, tree, shrubs, whatever. And it's still fine to get your herbicide on if you want to do, you know, broadleaf herbicide in your lawn if you're seeing lots of weeds. And you are going to see weeds right now over the summer. You know, the weeds weren't germinating and things weren't growing like they normally do. Now you're going to see chickweed coming up. I've got chickweed everywhere in my yard right now, which is kind of unusual because I usually don't. But I think it's because of all the reseeding that I've done. And so I'm going to do some spot treating as I bail this afternoon. I'm going to do some spot treating, and it's certainly fine to do broadleaf applications. People say, well, it gets too late. And it's like, no, if the grass is growing and the weeds are growing, it's not too late. People say, well, after the first frost, you shouldn't treat anymore. I disagree with that as well. As long as it's a nice, warm, sunny day, and even if it did frost the night before, you're still going to get control if you do your broadleaf herbicide. We're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Thanks for joining us again this week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. If you have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com, and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to join us again next week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.